Australian Futsal Committee, welcome to Futsal in Australia podcast. This one is number 8. Every time I bring a unique guest, someone that has a unique story, and someone that has impacted futsal in Australia in a positive way. And today is no different. Today I have a very special guest, Ryan Shepard. Ryan, thank you so much for accepting the invitation. And I look forward to it.
Thanks, Michael, also for being able to join and talk about futsal going on Oz.
Can't wait. It's a very special one. And next to me, it's my co-host today, Michael Tsiarez. Michael, thank you for being my co-host for today.
It's a pleasure, Andre. It's also good to get a chance to speak to a FIFA referee, especially one in Australia, which shows that, you know, Australia is, there is a chance for us as we go along.
Definitely there is. Ryan, people know you on the court, but let's just quickly start you off of the court. What do you do? What's your job?
Yeah, so I work in education, the state education system here. Started off as a teacher and went my way up to working as a principal. And my last school had 770-odd kids and a large staff as well. So plenty to keep me occupied when I'm not running around on a futsal pitch or a football field.
Oh, yeah, I can't imagine that. And Ryan, just before we get to the futsal stuff, where did you grow up? Where were you born? Where did you grow up? What part of Australia are you from?
Yeah, so you know, I'm on the Northern Beaches part of Sydney. Was born here and still continue to live here in what's a beautiful part of the world over here. So in my time, I really live on the Northern Beaches part, not too far from the beach now, probably about 20, 25 minutes away. But, yeah, always sort of lived in the same area. Done plenty of travel, obviously, now through futsal, but life has pretty much kept me in the one area till now.
Yeah, I was just I was doing some studying on your career just before, and I saw that you, since 2009, you became a FIFA referee in the AFC panel. You went to at least one AFC per year. Is that right?
Yeah, pretty much up until the last couple of years, really. There's one at least one tournament every year. Plus, we do seminars in usually January, February each year over in Malaysia. So we always travel across to Kuala Lumpur as well. So there's usually a couple of tournaments each year. So it's always a juggle between, you know, home life and also managing, you know, your career as well as being a referee. So plenty to keep busy, that's for sure.
Michael, for sure, has those struggles as well. But Ryan, how do you manage to keep this balance between your family, your business, your work career and the refereeing career?
Like anyone, at times you're making plenty of sacrifices. I think from when I started off refereeing in football and obviously through futsal, I've been doing it now for about 28 years, so it's a long time to do it. And, you know, through that time there's things where you sacrifice being away from work, but there's also times where work has had to take a priority as well. So there's definitely been times throughout my refereeing career where you've had to sit back and knock back a tournament or knock back a level of travel based on the fact that you just can't always do both. How am I able to do it? That I'm pretty lucky. I've got a great support system and family around. I've got two kids. I've got Liam, who's 8, and Zoe, who's 18 months old. So I'm very fortunate between our family and particularly my partner, Kate, who does an extremely great job that allows me to spend the time to train and to prepare for tournaments and also be away for long periods of time as well. So I couldn't do it without their support.
Definitely, it's something I know as a young parent now as well, that you do have to sort of find that balance wherever you can. Ryan, growing up, did you play futsal or football?
Yes, so growing up for me, it was predominantly playing football. So I started pretty, like a lot of people at the young age of playing under sixes and playing football through until probably about the age of 16 when I was a much better referee as I started to become a referee than I was probably a player as a goalkeeper. Usually a lot of the time back then, not too much in the futsal side, played plenty of small-sided games and five-a-side games and things like that in various levels of competition. But definitely my playing was through the football in the young years and then through the teenage years as well. So that was predominantly where the experience came from.
Something very similar for me as well. Yeah. Being that I played as a goalkeeper up until you know, I was about 21, but I was also reffing in between, and then decided to pursue reffing a bit further because I felt that was an area where I was definitely more inclined.
The incredible experiences that I've had over time would never have been achieved as a player, so I guess it's just taking a different avenue and a different pathway, but it's, for me, it's been the right one, most definitely.
And when did you start refereeing? How did that come across?
Yeah, so I started in the Manly Warringah Referees Association. So that was my local association at the age of, I said, about 16. I think really it kicked off when it was a way of earning money back then. So in terms of part-time work and a part-time job, refereeing was an avenue that, given my involvement in the sport at that point, I'd done a lot of some coaching as well. So not only playing but also coaching for an extended period of time, and then took up the refereeing, I think, purely for, money as a job. And so in those early days, you'd always referee in the mornings and you'd run a line in the afternoon on some of the senior grades as you started to cut your teeth working your way through.
Do you remember someone special that got you involved in the game or those early days? How did you learn about refereeing? Was that someone that actually mentored you at that time?
Yeah, definitely. I had a couple during that time, again, because of geographically where you lived, you tended to referee a lot of your mornings and things like that in the same area. So I had a gentleman by the name of Don Gale down in our local Pittwater area who was sort of a mentor for me and guided me through those early years, and some of the guys that you'd work with in the senior grades in the afternoon. So, like, I suppose players as well, you get coaches along the way who you connect with and who support you on those and mentor you through your refereeing career in those early stages, and as you improve and develop. And probably there's no more lonely a spot often than a referee in the early parts of their career, whether it be futsal or football, when you're appointed as one single person going along to games and you're standing there on your own. It's a lot to deal with, particularly for the younger kids and things like that, as you make your way through developing yourself.
And look, now you wear a FIFA badge, but those early days you were doing both, weren't you? Soccer and futsal, or did you start doing soccer before then you came into futsal? How did that work?
Yeah, so soccer football was a really big part of my refereeing career, probably up until about 2006 before I took up futsal. So the predominant level of my experience to that point in time was coming through football. So I guess the pathways ran very similar to what players would be experiencing with now in terms of representative opportunities, and the same for referees, that's how you'd spend your Saturday refereeing what would be the state youth competitions in by the age groups, and you'd work your way through those levels. And I was fortunate to work right up until the national level in football through the state strong NPL in the Premier League in New South Wales, and then also started to pick up through, I guess, who's become my mentor in futsal, Adrian Tamplin, who's done an extraordinary job not only promoting futsal in Australia for refereeing, but was definitely a mentor and someone who guided me through those early days when I stepped and still ran football and futsal at that time. So back when I came across to futsal, I was still refereeing on the National League for football, so the A-League, and then balancing that with doing futsal as well. So life was pretty busy at those times.
I was reading just before that you refereed 32 matches in the A-League over 3 years. Did you referee for three
years? Yeah, three seasons, right? Yeah.
How was that time refereeing a National League, the highest level you can ref in Australia? Yeah.
Look, at that time, it was the highest level of competition in the country, obviously, and gave a lot of incredible opportunities to referee at different levels, and obviously the exposure that came through the game through the Fox Sports and things like that. Some incredible opportunities in games in front of large crowds and things like that you recognise. I think out of those 32 games, the biggest crowd was about 26,000. Something like that. So just incredible experiences that I was never going to achieve as a player, but to walk out onto a pitch in that in front of large audiences and things, it was a big buzz attached to it as well.
And referring a A-League match, how is that comparing to a Futsal World Cup? Just going straight to the point.
In some ways, there's a lot of similarities in being part of elite level of sports. You're working with professional players. You're working with people who are just as skillful and have worked really hard to be reaching those particular levels. But the Futsal World Cup for me is obviously the pinnacle that anyone can reach. It certainly wasn't a goal in those early days. I don't think when you set out to become some may do, but for me it certainly wasn't about, reaching the pinnacle level of the National A-League competition in football or in for futsal making the World Cup. Some of those things are well outside something within your control, but sometimes it's quite different as well. So with what we've experienced over the last, 18 months with COVID and things, that was, whether the Futsal World Cup was even going to go ahead. So you've got to be pretty lucky in some ways that some things work to your advantage.
For sure. We're going to get to that point very soon. We're going to be talking about the World Cup. But firstly, what were some of the highlights that at a national level refereeing futsal? So let's say you mentioned the New South Wales Premier League. Did you referee many Australian national championships as well?
Yeah, definitely. I think up until when I first probably joined the went to my first nationals, I know it might have been 2007 after I started. And then up until the recent times with no national championships, I've usually been there in some capacity. So whether it was refereeing on the pitch, particularly those days before getting my FIFA badge, then getting the FIFA badge in 2009 at the national championships down there in Canberra, and then the last couple of championships because of the withdrawal of the Open Men's and Open Women's competition, then, you know, it was open to other referees to step through. So the role of the FIFA panel really then started to become in more of a mentoring coaching capacity, working alongside the other, I guess, coaches who were down there to lead those guys. But, you know, I think going into this year, we'll probably touch on that a little bit later about the national championships and what that's going to look like this year. But, you know, there were some great matches down there in nationals in the ACT down there in the main arena. Refereed a few finals down there.
I actually think that you were the referee Victoria against New South Wales Thunder in 2011, were you, in the grand final?
Yeah, I'm quite positive. Look, I'm not great at remembering matches, but
I recall you actually. I think.
No, Jesus, don't you worry. I won't ask you why. Huh?
No, it was actually positive.
Right.
And one thing I want to actually mention on the podcast is all the FIFA referees, they come across as being very respectful. Is that something that you guys work on? Just the way you treat the players, not just by knowing the rules, but also by being respectful to them so they respect you back.
Absolutely. I mean, there's four referees on the FIFA list at the moment. So there's myself, Darius Turner, Andrew Best, Jonathan Moore. In some ways, we're very different referees, and I'm sure there's guys out there who coaches, players who have been part of it would recognise that, you know, and sometimes we each got our own different styles, but you know, it's got to come from that level of mutual respect to be able to work productively together. I mean, the players are out there to achieve their best and reach those levels. The referee's there to do the same. And I think what people probably don't recognise, even probably for referees coming through, is that your performance off the pitch, the way in which you conduct yourself, holds just as much credibility than what it does on the pitch. There's probably guys in the past who have been really good referees and had potential to reach the higher levels. But if you don't sort of conduct yourself off the pitch in what you're talking about, a respectful manner, you know, being mindful that you are role models for others, the way in which you conduct yourself around pitches, change room, coaches, players, managers, et cetera, and things like that, then that's all part of the deal that comes with it as well. Because the more you progress through, you're not only representing, I guess, yourself, but you're also refereeing the different layers. And for me, it's refereeing, it's Football Australia that you're representing. You're representing AFC. You're representing FIFA as well. So there's a lot of responsibilities that come as part of that and the way in which we conduct ourselves, I suppose, on and off the pitch, which is really important.
So would something like for you, Ryan, being that, you know, you've worked as a teacher and, you know, as a principal, did those things translate really well to being a FIFA referee as well?
Yeah, I think there is that humanistic part to it straight away, of course, when dealing with people and whether it's working with kids and working with adults, the basis is the same in underpinning of a lot of that work that you do. And I think one of the important things as a referee too is that, you know, you're going to have different players that you're going to officiate, different personalities and different types, and being able to read those situations and being able to connect with them is really important part of it. So just jumping back to Andre, just talking about the nationals and some of those battles, you know, the New South Wales teams versus Victoria against ACT. And, you know, it was always fun to actually referee the New South Wales Thunder, New South Wales Lightning match as well, because back in those times, you had some quite competitive players, you know, full of personality as well. And they were tough matches. Physically, they were tough matches, but, you know, there's a good element of being a referee on part of those too, because they were fun to be part of.
Yeah, absolutely. And Ryan,
do you feel it really takes time to gain experience as a referee? So as you say that players can be talented, can referees be talented, natural talent as well, or they actually need to get experience, if that makes sense, Mike?
Yeah, absolutely it does. I think what's got to come with it is that it's you can probably have referees who are exceptional on the laws of the game. So if you were to throw them out, there are laws of the game quiz or something like that, they're nailing it. They're hitting 95, 100% on the technical aspect of refereeing and what the laws represent. But you've got to be able to have that knowledge and then be able to apply that to game situations, apply that under pressure, understand the context of the game and things like that. So I think there's a natural element to some of that work as well, where you've got to get the balance right. There's no point being one way where you might be able to officiate, full of personality and things like that, but not understand the laws, but also vice versa. The laws are written as they are, clear, black and white, but the way in which you implement them varies a little bit as well. And I think you've got to strike the balance really importantly when you you do that. So I think there's some natural things that come through, the personality traits, I suppose, that come through in which makes a good referee at the end of the day.
And look, just before we fully move on from your soccer time and fully concentrate on futsal, what was harder, a refereeing soccer, futsal, and which one you enjoy more? Let's put it that way.
Yeah, look, I think there's elements of the game that are very similar. But there's also elements that are quite different. And the thing I enjoy about the futsal part is obviously the speed of the game, the technical ability, the speed of decision-making that you've got to go with, the excitement of the game, of players to how within futsal on a stop clock match you have the game, if it's tight, can go right down to the wire. Like every second truly does count in the playing of the game too. So, in a really tight futsal game, whether it's combative, it's up moving forward and backwards through your attack and defense and your transition. It's certainly enjoyable to be part of, that's for sure.
I got it. And then, Ryan, you became a FIFA referee in 2009. Just tell us about that process. What's involved in becoming a FIFA referee? Is there, how do you get that badge and what's the process like?
Yeah, so Australia is only able to hold 4 spots at present on the FIFA list. So you're talking about a limited number of spots for guys who may be aspiring to that particular level.
And is there separate soccer and futsal?
Yes, there are, yeah. So it sits differently in assistant referees in football, beach soccer for countries that run that as well. So so you've got your sort of allocation of spots. So it's quite obviously competitive and guys who are aspiring to be on that particular list. As I said, a lot of the skills that I had transferred across to refereeing futsal. And then I sort of worked through the national championships for a few years and then was nominated through for the FIFA list after that. And as I said, sat on that since 2019. So it's been 13 long seasons, but great opportunities that have gone along with it now. And in some ways, it's gone incredibly quickly during that period of time. And each year, you've got to be re-nominated too. You don't just get to sit on a mortgage on the spot till you decide to retire and pull the pin on it. You've got to keep performing. And the best thing, again, like players, I suppose, where, you want pressure on your spots, and as a coach, you're looking for the depth of squad and looking for the transition plans and guys coming through. The same thing should sit within the refereeing ranks. The 4 of us who hold a FIFA badge should be working each year to maintain that and maintain the elite level and have guys coming through that says, if you're not going to step up to the standard, we're ready to take your spots.
Oh, yeah. This competition always helps. So you say that all your 4 referees have to go to Malaysia once a year in January? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. So the way it works is you've obviously got our FIFA list of 4, and then there's the AFC elite panel. So it's slightly different in that there's a training requisite for the AFC list that's become quite more detailed and involved now over the last few years, and that looks like not only testing referees' technical knowledge, so you're looking at laws of the game quiz just to check your understanding there. You're looking at video analysis and video quizzes as well when you're looking at what it would be deemed to be the technical aspects. So, is this a foul? Is it not a foul? What type of foul is it? Then is there any a sanction attached to it? So, when you're watching things for the first time and you see a clip, and often there's only 1, maybe 2 replays when you're undertaking a quiz, the pressure's on because you're trying to look at it and make your judgments. And there's also the physical training component that sits with that as well. So at present, there's 3 of us on the AFC elite list. For me, I'm being the longest serving now at for 12 years on that list, and we usually travel across to Malaysia. The last time we went was January 2020, and so that's four to five days over in Kuala Lumpur, again, testing us through all those different elements in preparation for what comes ahead. So fitness testing at that is an important part of it. You know, they, up until a couple of years ago, weight control was always a part of that as well. So, you know, you're coming off Christmas, you know, the end of the year, going through the Christmas festive period, Christmas, New Year's, and then jumping on an aeroplane, flying to Kuala Lumpur and jumping on a pair of scales as well at that period of time. So, you know, there's always challenges and the monitoring how fit you are and everything else like that. So it's always a challenge.
And futsal has taken off in Asia. You said that you were since 2009 an FC referee. So you follow this process of futsal growing Asia. And in this last World Cup, all five nations made it through to the round of 16s. Does that show? Does that reflect also the referees? Do you feel the referees are improving Asia? How are those Australian referees following this process as well?
Yeah, AFC, like you, I think even just listening to a couple of your previous podcasts where they're talking, I think Rob Varela was talking about some of the development in Asia and some of the other nations coming through and challenging what were some of the, what were the top countries previously. There's been a great level of investment in for monetary-wise, so financially in the development of the sport, but also with the technical knowledge and skills and coaches coming from areas within Europe, South America, and coming in and working with the Asian teams to really develop them and develop their own unique styles, which has been really important. And then as referees, when you're exposed to those levels, you've got to then rise with it. You're developing a different understanding of the tactical aspects of the game. Like physically, it's becoming more demanding. And AFC has definitely invested as a refereeing department a lot within our area as well, that not only, again, through the technical work that we do, but the work at competitions, professionalising it so we can sort of move along with the sport. And as you said, at the World Cup, the Asian teams performed exceptionally well at that particular point in time. And that can also, you know, any tournament, depending upon whether it's an Asian Cup, Asian tournament, or whether it's the World Cup, teams progressing at that level can also affect how many referees progress and what which referees progress as well, which is another critical factor to the performance as well.
And Ryan, you referee every year in the AFC. What has been some of the highlights in the AFCs for you? So I saw that you're refereeing some finals, you have two under-20s AFCs, the first under-20s, the first women's, and then another under-20s. So what has been some of your highlights?
Yeah, definitely. I think there's the opportunity to travel, which has been a really huge part of that, those opportunities. You know, I've been to Thailand multiple times to referee there, Indonesia, Vietnam, Uzbekistan, Qatar, Japan. So many sort of different places to experience culturally along with the matches themselves. That's always quite enjoyable because they might not be on your normal holiday travel list that you'd go to, and then you've got the matches on the pitch. Probably for me, one of the biggest highlights was like 2016, where I was appointed as the referee for the match for the final there. And I think coming through the knockout stages, I think I might have even had a semi-final and a final in that year. And they were tight fixtures down to penalty shootouts, I think, in both of the games. So decision-making being highly critical, the nature of futsal, of course, as well, with the fouls, that's very, very different to football. You know, you can give a foul in football and you can move on from it pretty quickly. People might agree, disagree, where futsal, the awarding of fouls absolutely changes the nature of the game quite considerably. So that puts a little bit of additional pressure on you as a referee, particularly if you're in a game that's having a high level of foul count. So for me, probably the games with the 2016 were important just because of the nature of, once you move into a knockout phase of the competition, the nature of the game is changing quite considerably, given the impact.
2016 was Iran against Uzbekistan in the final, wasn't it?
2016, the club, I think it was club. So I think we had
clubs. Okay,
mine might have been the club championship back then. We had Nagoya Oceans, I think, and maybe the team from Iraq. So I think
I don't recall off the top of my memory.
Stand to be corrected.
So, yeah, Ryan, with like those finals, obviously you're coming into it as, you know, with these big expectations on yourself as well, knowing that, you know, it's the final. How do you prepare for games like that, full well knowing that almost everything can be scrutinized by both teams as the game progresses?
Yeah, like by that point in time in the competition, you would have potentially refereed those teams before, or you've at least seen them. So you've got a different understanding of the tactical nature of the game and things like that. So that's an important part of the preparation, that you just understand how the teams are going to work, because that obviously certainly impacts sometimes your positioning work and the movement, particularly if teams looking to counterattack or play long and things like that to go with it. You always just revisit, probably within the laws of the game, the aspects around extra time and penalty shootouts. And whilst you're familiar with them, when it becomes more paramount in the knockout stages, you know, mm-hmm. you always sort of go that extra level just to revisit that you've got head around the important parts of how that they work from a procedural point of view.
Yeah.
It's really important as well. So, you know, you can control what you can control at the end of the day. Players are probably very much the same, but you tend to have routines. And the thing for people to think about as well, when we go and referee at championships, the time difference back to Australia can be considerably quite different. So you're talking eight odd hours at times. So where you might be here kicking off for a late game at 8 o'clock local time back there, you're talking, you know, early hours of the morning to your body clock. So that's something, particularly in the early parts of the tournament, you're still adjusting to think, you know, back home it's 3 o'clock in the morning and I'm preparing for this particular match or something like that. And obviously throughout the tournament, you could be away for 2.5-3 weeks on big tournaments. You're acclimatizing for a bit better. So you definitely have your own pre-match routine that you like to follow.
Do you have any superstitions that you always do before matches?
No, nothing superstitious.
A coffee, a Red Bull?
No, like a Red Bull or things like that. Don't put one shoe on before the other or something like that. The point probably comes down to, in some change rooms, I have just a preferred spot to sit. Not, and if I don't have to sit there, if I don't sit there, it doesn't truly matter to me. I don't
walk out there and the door or the change room.
Well, I think it's a quiet spot sometimes, so you're not sitting at the change room door or something like that. And I don't mind a little bit of music as well. So, you know, I'll often just before going out, I'll put a bit of music on, because depending on the nature of the change rooms, you might not just have the referees for that match in there. Guys might have just come off. So it can be quite busy and chaotic and things. So just before I go out, I tend to just pop a bit of music on to myself and tune out to some of the other chatter that's going on in the change rooms at the time. But that's just, I don't see it having any superstitions that says, you know what, if I haven't done this, I'm going to walk out there and today's match is going to be a disaster. Some definitely do that. Some quite intriguing and things like that. But, you know.
And do the referees change often, or you know pretty much all the referees for many years? You guys get along well, or
you meet for the first time? Yeah, look, the AFC, I mean, within Australia itself, like a lot of us have known each other for a long period of time, and realistically, the four FIFA referees are all from in New South Wales, and we probably live within about half an hour, 40 minutes of each other. So it's not a sort of big area that we have contact. And for some of us, we've known each other for long periods of time, coming through football or through our time in futsal. So when we go away together, you know, it's like going away with your mates, really, in a lot of ways. And I think that's a really important part of it. At Asia, you know, you're talking about substantial difference in culture and obviously religiously as well from some different countries, and understanding of English. And whilst all referees, the base level of work is in English, that, you know, there's limited. I mean, I can speak English. I learned probably a tiny bit of Spanish while I was away, but that's the extent of it. Where for some of these other referees, they're doing their best to converse in English. And that can impact the level of conversation that you have at times. It definitely impacts too how you communicate during a match as well. So if you're communicating with an English-speaking nation on the other side, then it's a lot easier. And one thing we probably find as well, refereeing in international competitions with somebody else, is that the way in which we speak in English is rather quite quick. And that can be really problematic in terms of match management and working with other people. We've got to be conscious that when we are speaking, that we slow it down and break it up a little bit, particularly for the others, if it's not their naturally first language.
And what about when you referee teams from South America, did they try to speak Spanish with you?
I was appointed to one of the matches in the knockout phases towards the end of the competition. And I was the reserve assistant referee along with the third referee managing the technical areas. And I think probably the fact that we didn't understand was to our own advantage. It was tense. There was plenty going on the pitch. So the fact that we didn't understand what was being said in Spanish, I think was probably a good thing that it was communicated to us afterwards.
Julian's from Instagram, as we cover all the shows of the World Cup. So after every day, we did a show on the World Cup, and we did a lot of analysis and talking about you. So how much you were suffering trying to control those benches there.
Yeah, look, I think that... But even then, it's quite there's still a level of discipline and control. You're talking about professional coaches and professional players. Their careers sit around the results and the way in which they conduct themselves as well. So they're absolutely, you're talking about the elite level, there's going to be pushing of boundaries, and there's going to be pushing to gain an advantage, I suppose, to some degree, and a level of influence. But often there's still a boundary in that, you know, for these guys to still represent their national country, then that they have to work within those frames. But you can understand.
Less rough than the local league would get. Huh?
No, absolutely, yeah, definitely. And I think that's a bit different to some of our local, you know, New South Wales Premier League competitions at times. But I think the ability to not understand was probably to our advantage in some of those games at the end.
All right, now we're going to start talking about the World Cup. Is that the pinnacle of your career? Would you say that when you got that call up for the World Cup, what was the feeling like?
Yeah, look, absolutely, it's the pinnacle. So what they originally did back in, obviously with the World Cup being held, meant to be held last year, for AFC, the major futsal championships weren't held. They're due for around February or March in 2020. Yeah. So we saw that as potentially being the trial run for referees to perform at that competition, to be have their names put forward, and that sort of didn't happen. So a certain level of uncertainty. So I was just looking back through, and we got notified in February of 2021 that we'd been included on the list of referees for potential candidates for the World Cup. So in that initial stage, we had about 76 from across the globe who were put forward to be potential referees for the World Cup, of which 16 of us were nominated from Asia. So each confederation having a limit to the number that they could put forward. And so that work started in February, and we didn't get the sort of confirmation that we'd been selected until early July. So realistically, we had 7 to 8 weeks confirmation. So, I mean, absolutely pinnacle. And then to get the phone call from Football Australia, the referees department, to advise me of the that I'd been selected. We didn't even have a date either. We didn't know when those decisions were going to be made, and when normally you have a date sort of idea. Mm-hmm. But to that point, we didn't have that. So we'd been doing a lot of work leading up to the World Cup. From February through to July, we were doing seminars every fortnight by Zoom. Based out of Switzerland, again, time difference back for us was really problematic when it first kicked off without time differences. They were 1 a.m. to 3 a.m. Online, again, laws of the game, video quizzes, your breakout groups and things like that. So, you know, even though the time difference was pretty problematic, you still had to be functioning and aware of what was going on. So quite a long lead-up preparation technically through our video sessions prior to the final selections being made, where we came down to 38 referees and one reserve referee. So in the group from Asia, we went from 16 nominations down to 8. So that's tough.
So do you feel they pick the top 8 referees?
Yeah, it's always going to be a level of subjectivity, of course.
Ryan, sorry, I'm just going to leave it all there. I did some research before. 2008, 2012, we had Scott Kidson refereeing the World Cups. And then 2016, we had Chris Colley.
We did.
You know the other two referees well?
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. So when I look, even historically going back, Australia's got a really long record and successful record of referees being at previous World Cups and a continuous representation as well. So it's a pretty big honour you know, you can probably talk a little bit length later on about the development of the sport within Australia and where it's got to go to, and for not only players but also for referees as well. So for us to have that long connection with World Cups through guys, when I started in Asia, both Scott and Chris were there for those journeys through, which was great to have a couple of Australians with us along the learning journey and adapting to being part of just a new level of professional refereeing with AFC. So, yeah, referee with both Scott and Chris many a times. And then, obviously, Chris, 2016 was the last thing for me this year as well.
I couldn't find who was the I couldn't find if we had an Australian referee in 2004, and I couldn't find it back then. But do you know if there was any other Australians in 2000, 96, 92?
Yeah, look, exact years. We had obviously Adrian Tamplin, Rob Porritt, who have been involved in the World Cups before as well. So we've got a long history and probably a more successful history at that elite level than what probably we have achieved in football. So there's something within futsal that we can feel proud of, that not only we're trying to get our national team there to play, but also getting our referees to that elite level as well, given that we don't have a strong national comp, particularly at present, for us to be working and developing in it.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's definitely a beautiful story. I've met you guys personally. I met Scott, yourself, and Chris. You guys do an amazing job. And also I met your co-referee, Captain Farhad from UAE. So I met him last year. I was in UAE last year. And one thing that comes across to me is how polite you guys are and how, just all nice guys around. But Ryan, the World Cup, you refereed two games and you were third officials for a few other games as well.
Yeah, so I refereed two games through the group stages of the competition. So I refereed my first match there in Angola, Paraguay, and then the second one was Portugal, Morocco. So that had a little bit in it because that was the last match for that group, with the result impacting on which team went through in the top position, which is important because obviously looked at then how they would seed through into the knockout phases as well and what that looked like. So important result there. Then I also had two in the knockout stages, so running one in the round of 16 and then one in the quarterfinals as well. So I finished with four matches on the pitch, which was fantastic. If you'd said to me before heading over, you know, how many games, you know, you always take your first one and then perform from there and see how it goes. So to finish with four, look, I was really pleased with, particularly two, again, I said, in the knockout phases where the pressure changes and then the outcome's quite different as well.
And that game against Kazakhstan, Iran was a really tough one, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was, absolutely. Interesting that obviously Iran being an AFC team, but then also with Kazakhstan being a point as well. So there was myself as an AFC referee and then also one from UEFA as well from Europe. So one from each confederation appointed to that. Obviously dominated in the first half by Iran and then in the latter part by Kazakhstan, coming back towards the end as well. So highly competitive match, a couple of things in there that, were discussion points, no doubt, but that's all part of it. I think that's one thing we did notice at the World Cup across the games, that given the nature of the teams who were playing, the level of competition, you know, there was always critical incidents in every single match. So plenty to review the next day.
So obviously with that, Ryan, this is the first year that VAR was included at a Futsal World Cup. What preparation did you guys go through for everybody to be at least knowledgeable enough to understand how the system worked?
Yeah, that's a really good point there, Michael, because it was something that's really unusual that video support was introduced at the highest level of competition at a World Cup. You're talking about a real major change to the laws of the game in terms of the protocol. So our work began in those seminars, as I was talking to you online, through, you know, February down to July and a little bit beyond that, where we were really given the strict protocols in which the referees could access and use VAR through the coaches' challenge. So a bit like rugby league in some ways, that the review is initiated by the head coach only. So a player can't call for review, captain can't call for review. It's got to come through the head coach. One per half being allocated as well. So we did the theory knowledge prior to arriving, and then we arrived 10 days before the commencement of the first game of the World Cup. So we had quite extensive, again, theory sessions in the classroom, but the technology was provided by Hawkeye. So obviously ones who are heavily involved in tennis as one sport. And then we had at our training venue in Lithuania. So we were staying in a place called Bristonis. We had an indoor sports center, which was set up with the full camera system that we would be using at the World Cup matches. And we had trial games. Some were a couple of international friendlies, but trial games that were being played where we were then getting to practically use the technology in those matches to get a feel for, again, we would have our coaches calling for challenges at the time where inside the protocols or outside, and our job was obviously to then respond that, no, that's outside the protocol. You can't call for a video support challenge in that situation, or what situations we, very limited number that we could call for video support ourselves. So in the end, prior to the final two, so the third versus fourth in the final for the World Cup, 53 challenges from memory were called for, and three decisions were changed.
We noticed that.
Yeah. Again, what needed to happen with the video support challenge was it needed to be black to white or white to black. They weren't to change to a level of grey. And things when you watch on video too, there's some really important points around what you watch in slow motion and what you watch at normal speed as well. So slow motion might be used to judge your point of contact, where you're running at normal speed though, because when you're looking at the intensity of foul, because sometimes you can slow things down too much and it can then you start to read into a situation something completely different. And then goal line situations, you can go frame by frame to get the accuracy of those decisions right. So, and we saw coaches use it quite differently throughout the tournament as well. And that was something that was quite interesting to see happening as coaches became more familiar with the system, how they tried to use that not only to review decisions but also potentially from a tactical viewpoint as well.
Just slow down the game and, yeah, break the momentum.
Yeah, look, one thing they couldn't do under the protocols, if for example, ball transitioning to a counter-attack situation, a coach could request a review, but the referees weren't obliged to stop that game immediately. Mm-hmm. From a tactical sense, to then deny the other team maybe an attacking situation and things like that.
Yeah.
From a tactical sense, where that became an interesting point was particularly teams around five fouls. So when you reviewed a decision, you had to restart the game correctly. So, penalty, no penalty situations, the foul could be outside the penalty area, but if it was to lead to the sixth accumulated foul, then obviously that changes the situation as well. So you had to be conscious of how that was used. But we saw it used effectively. I mean, I think it was the semi-final where it was used with a ball out of play. A goal was scored early. But just like from a positioning and movement, the ball had gone out of play in the lead-up to it. The coach quite intelligently used the video support review. The ball was clearly shown as being out of play, so the goal was disallowed. And in the game, the other team did win. I think that's when Portugal went through.
Mm-hmm. So it did help giving some credibility to the tournament as well. I think overall it showed actually that the referees were doing a good job. We spoke about this on the World Cup show. As you said before, 53 calls and only three were overturned. So it showed the referees are doing a good job. How did you feel personally using the video assistant?
Yeah, I think it brings that level of credibility. The nature of the game is so fast that the skill level to make split-second decisions. So I think, as you said, with the percentage that were sort of validated in some ways on the video support, strengthened the fact that the referees are making the right decision in live time. But it also meant that sometimes, decisions for coaches and players can sit throughout a whole entire match, particularly if a key incident happens early on where there's a view that the referee's got that decision wrong. So in the mind of the team or the players, they've had some sort of wrongdoing against them right from the beginning. But where those decisions could be reviewed, it actually annulled a lot of that pretty quickly, and that, okay, well, the decision's been made, it's correct. We're not going to have it sitting in the back of our mind that, oh, we could have had a penalty here or we could have had something else. Yeah. So I think that in terms of my own use for it, I think what you learn very on, I heard even just recently some people comment that oh, look, if you go across to the video and you have to change your decision, like that's a really poor thing to have to do. Well, the answer to that and the feedback we had from FIFA throughout was that that's not the issue. What we want at the end of the day is the right decision for the match, for the integrity of the match and things like that. We want the right decision. So if you go across and you review it and you decide you have to change, then that's fine. The worst thing you can do is review it and stay with your original decision because a bit of pride gets in the way and says, I'm not going to change it because of that.
No, I'll tell you what, you did a good job. Especially that game Kazakhstan against Iran. I was watching live. You made that call from Igita on that he didn't touch. Yeah. You said there was a simulation.
Yeah.
On the instance, I say, no, I think he touched it. And then I had to watch 10 times to see that he didn't touch it. Yeah. So at that moment, I say, Ryan's a good ref. Congratulations, Ryan. I don't wish I was there. Glad you were there, not me. Yeah. Ryan, how is the routine of a referee during the World Cup?
Yeah. A little bit different. Those 10 days beforehand, our routine was pretty similar, pretty sort of similar pattern. We would have theory in the morning. You know, when we're talking theory, I'm talking 3 hours usually of classroom work. A break around lunchtime and then 3 hours practical. So trying to take that theory work in the morning session into a practical session in the afternoon. We also undertook the fitness test when we arrived a couple of days after we'd acclimatized. We all had to undertake the fitness test as a pre-competition requirement that you had to pass that to be continuing in the competition. And then after that, our schedules tended to vary a little bit depending upon where we sat in the preparation of the competition. So if we were on our match day, on the pitch in particular, then we wouldn't have a physical training session. If we were taking part in the, you know, we were match day, what they call match day minus one, then we'd undertake physical training, but more of a preparation sort of, you know, switching on a little bit, working with the partner who you're going to be on those games with, training separately from the whole group in that part. And then match day plus one, you were doing recovery work as well. So your training schedule looked different. If you had a couple of days break in there, then you're undertaking your high intensity sessions. So they were working you hard either in the indoor, on an indoor pitch or on an outdoor grass football pitch. You were working pretty hard. And all our training sessions and all our matches, we had heart rate monitors on. So we were being monitored for each of our games. Yeah. To level out our physical performance and how we were going and then how the training sessions then went. So, but one of the venues as well in Klaipeda, which was about three hours 15 away from our home base in Bristona. So it was quite a long venue. So for those matches, we'd travel the day before and then you'd stay the night, do the match the next day. And this is what people, I suppose, aren't aware of, which is a bit of an insight that, you know, after the first group of matches we did out there, we finished at 10, just after 10 o'clock. We went back to our hotel. We picked up our bags, travelled the 3 and a bit hours back to our base camp and, you know, finally got into to bed about 2 a.m. in the morning. So it's a long day in that sense. And then, you know, 2 a.m. and you're up in the morning to then do the video reviews. So after the games, that's the following day, you would tend to do an hour and a half, 2 hours of video review of the games from the preceding day and looking at video clips and analysing decisions and things like that. So, the schedule varied following on from once the game started. And then we had a couple of rest days in there, but usually those rest days right till the end were fairly full with, you wouldn't probably call them traditional, what you'd see as being a rest day and anything else like that. So, and the temperature was quite cold, so there's no outdoor pool. There's no indoor as well. So weather was okay, but certainly wasn't warm sometimes.
It does feel like you guys are a professional team, but a team of referees, that's what it is. When lots of Australian teams, they're not professionals here. When they go, they enjoy being a professional team for a certain period of time. Is there the same with you guys? When you go, you enjoy having that moment of being a professional referee again?
Yeah. Look, no doubt, particularly at the World Cup, they absolutely treat you as professional and elite sports people as well. So what they provide in terms of the hotel facilities to enable you to prepare for matches the best you possibly can, the support staff that you've got available through physiotherapists and massage therapists to provide you with that, around, I guess, even managing your diet and all those sorts of things as well. So you're absolutely treated at the professional level. There's no doubt about that. And particularly for the World Cup, because you're away for 5 weeks. 5 weeks for the tournament, and then obviously 2 weeks of quarantine coming back. So it's a 7-week commitment away from home. So, I think sometimes people think it's an incredible opportunity, and which it is, even other tournaments. But, you know, you're often spending a number of weeks away in a hotel room, which by the end of it, you're certainly looking forward to coming back home.
For sure, it'll be. Any other highlights of the tournament you want to add in? And also, I want just to ask you, how annoying was that goal, the little triangle at the bottom of the goal? Were you guys telling them to just fix the goal or something?
Oh, absolutely. Because I thought we saw in those first few matches too. I mean, it might seem as a really, small or minor point, but the way in which the goals were constructed, you'd probably say there was 2 to 3 incidents in those first early match days where balls hit it and came out.
Yeah.
And just by that small extension in the goalpost that, they were hitting that. So it actually became something that we were aware of, and they end up screwing in a little piece of like fiberglass or perspex to the corner part of the goal area to try and alleviate that problem, because the balls were hitting that on the angle and the force against that were actually sending the balls back out. Minor things, but, if you're the attacking team and you're sort of, missing out on those opportunities, but said majority of times they probably would have gone into the goal had it not hit that part. So the way in which it was formed, the whole ball hadn't crossed that line, so they're definitely bouncing back out. So small thing, but very big in terms of the whole thing. So
Now, Ryan, futsal in Australia. We haven't had a national league for the past few years. We haven't had a main's team for the past couple of years. Next time we're going to have one, as Rob Varela mentioned, will be before the qualifiers for the next World Cup, AFC, the AFF. How not having a national league, not having the main's, women's, and the 20s, boys, how does that affect the referees? And how can we also help improve the referees in Australia?
Yeah, look, I think it's a development of the, like you're talking about development of players, you're talking about pathways. It's no different for referees at the end of the day, being able to see a pathway that when I step into a sport and I'm refereeing futsal for the first time, if I want to pursue that, well, what opportunities are there for me to get better, to improve? I think Michael might have talked about before when we were either in or just before the actual thing started, that saying, for people who don't want to go down the playing pathway, that the refereeing can offer some incredible opportunities to take things to the elite level. So at the moment, we're probably missing some really key links in those development pathways where guys are refereeing within their state and whatever that state level of competition looks like. But at present, when we were running the New South Wales state competition for futsal, it's very different to being able to referee, an international match of some kind, whether it be men's, women, looking at under 20s as well, and the nature of how a stop clock game will work as well. So, really in some ways, this is where there's an opportunity for guys who are working within the organisations to sort of try and come together and say, for the betterment of the players' development and the progression of futsal in Australia, then also for referees, we need the opportunity to do matches, because for those coming through, there's really not the opportunity to demonstrate their ability to challenge themselves on different level of matches, because that quality is not there. I mean, a couple of years ago, I think we had, the Solomon Islands came out and were playing over here a couple of games in preparation, and even that was just a nice step up in level of play, which is really important for referees as well, because my last games before heading across the World Cup were playing out at Park Lee in the competition that was out there, which is very different to an international level fixture when you're talking about some of the top countries in the world, from particularly Europe, South America, and a couple of the other AFC teams as well. So, yeah, that pathway is quite critical that we have some level of establishment, and that's why, even going into nationals in January, it's a really important thing that happens. And the introduction of the men's and the women's competition, again, if we can get quality players being able to take up that those few days to participate and play, that's a really important part.
So, Ryan, in terms of, like, from your perspective, what would be the best way for a new referee to get involved and then to truly understand the pathway to, you know, potentially get to, you know, a FIFA badge? Whereas, you know, for outdoor, we see that it is maybe a bit longer than it could potentially be for futsal.
Yeah, look, definitely. And I think that, you know, when guys step into futsal for the first time, you sort of, you learn the laws of the game, you're learning to do the lower level matches, you know, at the low, it might be just in centres and things like that for the first time. But as I said, they can be some of the challenging games because you're there on your own and you're trying to see both sides of the pitch and things like that. But
yeah,
in stepping into these opportunities to attend the Nationals, and the Nationals there have got people who are responsible for making decisions about progression of referees coming through from the different states as well. And I think that's a really important part in the refereeing mix, that we start to see some of the other states have guys who are willing to push it to FIFA list positions based on ability. Because my own personal view, it doesn't come down to geographically where you're situated in the country, but more importantly, you know, what ability that you do have and how you're able to perform when you get on the pitch. And so Nationals is a pathway to that, but then also development through the state competitions. But a national competition for futsal is probably an important part of that, because when we did have that and guys were travelling interstate, obviously to Victoria, up into Queensland, you were starting to work with guys from those states as well, and they got some exposure on some good matches. So that's definitely an important part of it.
Yeah, so there is an exciting movement happening. So next year we are going to have a women's, a men's in the state national championship. The only thing has been postponed to April already, so it's not a big problem. And there's talks of us having a national league back. Ryan, firstly, congratulations to everything you have achieved. You are an inspiration for a lot of people, an inspiration for Michael, for a lot of referees coming through. So I want to thank you. But before we go, we always play a little game called the Rapid Fire Questions. Nothing that's going to compromise you is a little bit of fun and banter. Okay.
Yeah, as I said, whilst I'm still an active referee, I've got a few years left in me. I'll avoid some of the controversial topics. So.
You are good on the spot. You answer very quickly. I'm sure you can break the 11 points mark. there's five people sharing the 11 points, and no one can break the 11 points. Right. Just before we play, Ryan, what's left in your career? What are your goals? Any upcoming plans that you have?
Yeah, look, I think it was last weekend I was out there at Dural with Rob for the small competition that's running at the moment. So at least that's trying to stay active a little bit. Friday night we had a seminar for AFC, which ran a couple of hours over Zoom. So they're still keeping us engaged, and we're hoping that the referees' calendar next year will actually be able to happen. We've got what was called the AFC Championships. We're now calling the AFC Futsal Cup now. So their qualifiers that are due to take place in April. We've got the seminar we can't hold. We won't be holding that in January. That's scheduled for July. So that'll be 4 to 5 days off to Kuala Lumpur. Then August club championships being held in the UAE, and then the AFC Futsal Cup being held in Kuwait in about October, I think. So there's a few competitions back on the agenda for next year. So it really be about preparing for those, hopefully doing some things domestically as well, just to keep yourself involved and not having sort of long breaks between games and competitions, which is really important. So yeah, plenty on the 2022 calendar at this particular point in time. So things to look forward to, definitely. Nationals in January.
Very good, very good. All right, let's get to the game. 40 seconds, right. When you're ready, we can start.
Mate, fire away.
So let's start in 3 seconds. 3, 2, 1. Your favorite way to spend time during flights?
Netflix.
What's more difficult, being referee or a school principal?
Principal.
Your favorite holiday destination?
Italy.
Your most memorable futsal tournament?
2016 club championships.
One characteristic that a referee must have?
Integrity.
What's your favorite workout? Favorite workout?
Workout, gym, cycle class.
Favorite food?
Pizza.
Tell us a nickname you have.
Shepo.
Favorite holiday country destination?
It's Italy, I said.
All right. Oh, so
what do we get to?
Yeah, nine aces. It's good.
Nine.
I was hoping that referee could just go. Amazing. Michael, thank you for being the co-host today. It was a pleasure.
Pleasure. Thank you for having me. It's good to get some insight from a FIFA referee and for a referee who is aspiring to get to as high level as they can. It's good to know that we have these connections that we can access when we get the chances.
And Ryan, I want to say thanks to Adrian for organizing this podcast as well. Adrian is the person that set us up. Ryan, thank you again, and hopefully see you soon.
Yeah, look, thanks, guys. Thanks for the opportunity. I think there's so many things about the sport that I have to look forward to going forward. So thanks, Michael. Thanks to you, Andre, as well, for the opportunity to chat to everyone. Appreciate it.
Thanks, everyone, for listening, guys. Next week will be the next podcast will be with Nesta Fonseca from Cambio Crumbler in WA and Alex, his head coach. So the two guys we'll be talking from Cambio Crumbler and how they built one of the most successful clubs in Australia. Thanks, everyone, for listening. See you guys soon.